Good afternoon, everyone. This is Susan Dene, and you are listening to the Know You're Crazy Talk Show, where we are talking about emotional elevation in the raw. What is emotional elevation in the raw? It is simply the removal of the filters which have held so many of us from truly expressing how we really feel about living this life day to day. Whether it be finances, romances, professional, or even our health, we all have a little bit of crazy to dive in and get to know. As a certified high-performance coach to corporations and individuals, as well as a woman helping women recover from alcoholism and addiction for nearly 20 years, I not only will bring you my insight and experience, but that of experts and everyday individuals like yourself who have figured something out about this emotional elevation. Please join me one episode at a time as we find solutions together for our crazy. Remember, this journey of life is meant to be enjoyed, and you deserve that because you are worth it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Know You're Crazy Talk Show. My name is Susan Dene, and I am here with my guest, Sandra. We are here today to talk about not only emotional recovery in the raw, but we will be talking about credit score recovery in the raw. I was inspired about a week ago when Sandra texted me some fantastic news in regards to her credit, and this aligned with my recent inspiration doing sobriety in the She Shack. And today, my guest is not only someone who has successfully repaired her credit, but she's also a woman in years of sobriety, as I am. And so today, between my 20 years clean and how many years you got?
Seven and a half
years clean. We're going to bring some of our expertise tidbits of how to restore your credit. Not only have I been helping women recover from alcoholism and addiction for 20 years, I also have been in the world of debt collection for nearly 25 years. So I have collected it, I've taught it, I've trained it, I've spoke about it, I've marketed it, all of the above. And in the world of recovery, I have always been very open about that aspect of my life. Although I'm not actively in that career anymore, I still do business consultations with the accounts receivable parts of that. Having said that, over the years, I have been asked numerous times by folks in recovery, how do I reestablish my credit? Where do I start? Sandra is a perfect example of somebody who not only came to me years ago to have this discussion, but then successfully implemented strategies on her end to make it happen. And I wanted to have her on the show today so that she can share her experience with us. And then we will be giving feedback to all of you who are watching, whether or not you're in recovery from addiction and alcoholism, or maybe you're just in recovery from life. Perhaps you're wanting to reestablish your credit. That's why you're tuned in today. Hopefully we're going to have some information that's going to help you on your way with that process. All right. So should we get started?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So what I'm going to do first is, Sandra, I'm just going to ask you, tell us a little bit about your story.
Sure.
And how you got to that point of asking me, what do I got to do?
Absolutely. I don't know that my story is unique, but it's a little bit long. You know, I experimented with drugs and alcohol early in my teens. Things got a little crazy in my 20s with a drug addiction. And then I got some sober time together. And I thought, you know, alcohol was never my problem. So I don't know why I'm abstaining from alcohol, because drugs were my problem. And that didn't take very long to just kick up and be worse than the drug addiction actually was. I was married to my high school sweetheart, divorced after 7 years, then got remarried pretty quickly, and was together with that man for 16 years off and on. And throughout that second marriage, we both just drank, didn't pay our bills, shopped and gathered things way beyond our means, had a few cars even repossessed that we had no business owning, right? Like,
yeah,
we wanted that shiny new red whatever. And it, you know, we'd own it for 6 months until, you know, the guy came and took it away. So we're always living beyond our means and in the throes of our disease, both of us. And, you know, each of us even racked up a few DUIs. So throw in some court obligations, yeah. Lots of court fines. DUIs are not cheap. And, you know, I eventually got sober, like for good in 2014, mm-hmm. after numerous attempts of trying to stay sober, but not actually doing any of the work required to stay sober for any real amount of time beyond maybe a year or, you know, something in that ballpark. So when I got here, finally, for good, I was left with a whole heap of financial debt.
A question for you. When you were, what I like to say, in your disease, when you were drinking, using, just living the life that we live when we're thick in our addiction, were you still telling yourself that you were a good person and that you had credit and that, you know what I mean? Like, we get that false sense of everything's okay here. We're still buying cars. We're still, you know, doing what we do. I did that. I mean, we were completely entrenched in our disease. And if you would have tried to look from the outside, I was trying real hard to hold everything up, hold everything up. Right. And so even if I had a car, you know, I thought I was somebody. Right. And those were the type of beliefs I lived by. Could have been mad if I could afford the car.
Oh, yeah.
But it made me feel good. Right. Yeah. And so do you think when you were in your disease, you still had that going on where you really thought you had a handle on your finances?
No.
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 Awesome.
No. There. I mean, and that was, you know, so I can see your point.
Yeah.
Of living the lie.
Yeah.
But I was more of the mindset of I knew I was a liar. I knew I was cheating the system, and I had huge guilt. You know, I was living in a way that was completely contrary to the morals and values of my upbringing.
Yeah.
And you know, I liked at the time to blame my significant other because he was so irresponsible and he was.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so was I. And more than anything, like, I allowed it to happen. Like, I don't know. Talk about a Jekyll and Hyde and the way we are so different when we're loaded than when we're not. Yeah. Like, you know, put me in a relationship at that time in particular, and I turned into like this codependent pile of mush that just had no voice. And so I would maybe bark about it when something bad would happen, when something new was purchased that I knew we couldn't afford because we had rent coming up, but it didn't matter. It never went back.
Yeah.
It was like this weird mindset of, oh, it's okay. Payday's on Friday. That was a big saying in our house. Mm-hmm. Payday's on Friday. Don't worry about it. I was always worried about it. And I think honestly, that perpetuated my drinking even more because I had so much guilt about it and so much fear about when was the next bill going to come in that I knew I couldn't pay, that would just go in the pile. My son, God, when he was young, he knew about bills, but he thought it was a person. He thought Bill was a person who was like going to come
you were
take
talking
our
about
money
bills so
because
much.
We were always talking about the bills. Right. Mm-hmm. And in his mind, and I would say, oh, no, you know, he was probably six at the time.
Yeah.
And so like, it was definitely always talked about, but there was never any action to change or do anything about it. It just kept mounting.
How bad did it get? Where I'm going with this is, did you have bill collectors calling?
Absolutely.
Did you have medical debt from going to the hospital? You know, whether it was legitimate or even drug related,
because
sometimes
absolutely.
We will do that. We will keep going back to medical providers in order to get the next drug of choice or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. So bill collectors are calling, you got medical debt piling up. Have you ever been sued? Did anybody sue you?
I did have a couple of judgments.
Okay.
So filed.
A couple judgments. Mm-hmm. And so for those of you who maybe aren't familiar with debt collection or how it works, you know, after a while, especially, and it will depend on the state that you live in, there's going to be, you know, eventually somebody can sue you for it. And sometimes people will say, well, I'm making payments, so they can't touch me. False belief. There is no such thing as that, just to clear the water. Now, there can be state laws that'll come in and say, if you make three payments in a row, it'll lock you into a payment agreement. I encourage you to look into your own state and your own laws when we're talking about this. Ultimately, what a judgment is somebody gets sued. And if the judgment in the court agrees that this is a valid debt or a valid contract between two parties and that the money is owed, a judgment is what somebody can enter against you to then eventually garnish wages. Many folks who find themselves in a financial tight spot, sober or not sober, doesn't really matter. When you get to the point of a judgment, then you're risking your wages being garnished. And what's really, what I had found in all the years I did debt collection, what's really unfortunate about that is, as much as you'd think that somebody would be aware that it's gone to that extent, sometimes there's been addiction under the roof, right? Mm-hmm. Or they don't remember being served the initial paperwork or whatever. They literally don't even sometimes are aware of the debt's owing until they're garnished at work. And then it's like all hell breaks loose, right? Now the calls are coming in to try to do something about the debt.
That's panic mode.
Now we've just upped the game, right? Somebody's got the attention. You know, one thing that I heard years ago in the rooms was when somebody was working with somebody in sobriety, he had said to the person he was sponsoring, he said, just remember, it's not your money. Because the person who convinced themselves that all these people call in, you know, and the sponsor's job was to remind them that, you know, this isn't your money, it's their money. And those are some of the hard lessons we get in recovery, because, you know, we are so blunt with each other in recovery, right? I mean, that's how we are, because it's important for our sanity, but also because when we've lived lives where we have a lot of regret, or we've lived lives of having a lot of shame, you know, our denial that we are capable of really takes a direct punch every now and then to wake us up.
Yeah.
Right. And then once we're awakened, things can start to happen and change can start to take place if we're willing, which is one of the reasons why I love having you here today to talk about this. So thank you for your honesty and sharing authentically everything that you preceded this, right?
You know me, I'm an open book.
I do know you. Yeah, why have you? Okay, so you get sober. How long into your sobriety was it before you really started wanting to take a look at the financial situation?
It was immediate.
Yeah, so you picked it up right out of the gate.
Yeah, it was immediate because I had that. I knew what was possible if I didn't do something, right? Because part of my story, because I had had bouts of sobriety. And the second husband and I actually divorced and were apart for 2 years. So I was a single mom, right? And then, you know, like we sometimes do, I thought, oh, you know, he's so different. I'm so different. We weren't different, but we stayed together for another 7 years. Just to see if it was going to be different.
Maybe.
Anyways, and all the same thing happened. Like the financial stuff was the same. Intimate problems in our actual relationship were still toxic and unhealthy, etc. So I had had bouts of being able to kind of reestablish myself and pay stuff off. And then I would give it away. And I would get it back and I would give it away. So, so when I got sober, I knew that this is it. End of the line. I am done with this whole crazy train of fear.
Do you remember the moment when you made the decision?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you and I were talking.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I do believe that, you know, the universe put you in my life for a number of different reasons. But, you know, really that one was a big one, that discussion we had. And that day I printed out my credit report that was like 26 pages long.
So hold that thought. Okay. So hold that thought. There's a 26 pages worth of thought going on there. So, you know, as we're talking about, you know, what do you do if you're just at a place in your life where you want to reestablish your credit? Like you're ready to finally, one, have the courage to look.
Yeah.
I once was working with a woman who was just buried in medical debt. just buried in medical debt. And what happens is what can happen with somebody when that occurs, there are so many bills coming into the mailbox that they become hopeless, overwhelmed. And it's a state of mind where the pile just keeps getting worse, especially with medical debt, because of all the different avenues of medical debt, mm-hmm. whether it's insurance billing or whether it's, just don't have the money, or there's a third party liability form that needs filled out. I mean, there's all these different avenues of getting medical debt paid. But I was, as I worked with her, what I could find is it literally was like almost like an addiction in itself, putting the bills to the side.
You can throw them away. And yes. Then they don't even,
yes.
They then, don't even
and then,
exist.
And then there's no, yeah, that's right. That's exactly what I'm talking about. So if somebody is past that point and they're tired of throwing the bills in the trash and they're tired of opening the mailbox with no solution, and every time they open it, they're fearful of what's going to be in there. I mean, that's how bad it can get, right? Like you're dreading. You're dreading even looking in the mailbox. Mm-hmm. But they're past that point and now they've gotten to where they're ready to take action. What in the very first thing you said you did was you pulled your credit report.
Yeah.
How did you do that? Where did you go?
I think it still exists. Annualcreditreport.com is free to the best of my knowledge. Yeah. It's still free.
Yeah.
And you can get all three credit bureaus because they don't always mirror each other. That was one thing that I already knew. And became abundantly clear that of the three credit bureaus, not every debtor reports to all three.
Yep. So, and so I'm going to clean this up just a little bit because those are fantastic points to make. So you've got three credit reporting agencies. You've got TransUnion, you've got Equifax, and you have Experian. I don't know if there's another one out there anymore or not, but those are the main three that when you're looking to pull your credit or if a car company or a finance company goes to pull your credit, they're going to one of those three credit reporting agencies. And then there can be some theory behind which one reports more critically than others and which one has the easier way to get your score lifted. And I know you've probably experienced this. It is different. It can be different. But that's what you're saying is you had all three credit reports pulled. And so when you go online and you find a free website to do this, and I believe the government also has options to do this for free. After the show, I'll do some research online. Maybe we can post some links to the show so that folks can go in there, maybe look into that if that's what they're choosing to do. Mm-hmm. But you run your credit and pretty much you're probably going to enter in your name, your date of birth, maybe your address, and most importantly, your social security number is most likely going to be required. So FYI, make sure that wherever you're running it online is a trusted source.
Yeah.
But you run your credit and what you'll find is each of these credit reporting agencies may report differently,
mm-hmm.
right? So TransUnion might not report as much information as Equifax. And Experian, I always found Equifax to be the very kind of the hardest one, the most strict. And TransUnion was kind of like the easy one. And Experian was like right in the middle. I don't know what your experience has been, but that was kind of what I always seem to come across.
Yeah.
But then you said not everybody reports to the same
bureaus.
That is correct. That is correct. And I personally know this working for an agency and agencies over those 25 years of debt collection that we didn't always use three. We only used one. Because there's what's called the Fair Credit Reporting, and it's very strict with what you can and cannot, and the auditing that takes place of the company. So why is that important to know?
Well, you don't want to miss one.
There you go.
I really wanted to be able to turn over every ugly rock that may be laying down there and uncover. I needed to know all the facts.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fact person and I wanted to know exactly what I was dealing with. Good, bad, or ugly, right?
Yeah.
Like, I just needed all the information. So I then knew where to start, which I really didn't know where to start. That's where you helped me.
That's where we sat down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what do you remember from that first conversation that we had?
I think the thing that sticks out the most for me was understanding which debts not to pay and which debts to focus on.
Yeah.
Right. Like some were very near being you know, falling off my credit report. So it was like, that one's been there, you know, 6 years, 9 months, leave that one alone. Hopefully they don't find you in the next 3 months. Lay low, right? Don't apply for any more credit, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
And then of course it was literally just, what was the total? And if I recall, I want to say the total was around 30,000. So it wasn't like a huge amount.
But it is, but when it you're not, when you don't have, but have, and you're, but starting, I don't know,
let's be fair. It's just, my addiction and my disease took me so low that I was living in an Oxford house.
And what is Oxford?
Oxford is a shared living, sober living environment. So I would, you know, I had basically like burned every bridge. I was not working, and it was December-ish, and nobody was hiring. Like, I was going in the field that I work in, I was going on all these job interviews. I had never not gotten a job like right away. And I was humbled quite quickly. I could not find anything. And because of where I was living in this sober living house, you had to have a job in 30 days. So the pressure was on. So on day 30, because I still didn't have a job, I had to walk my happy ass up to McDonald's.
And why were you walking?
And because I didn't have a car, because I also didn't have a driver's license because of my DUI. So I was in my mid 40s, no car, living in Oxford, working at McDonald's. Yeah.
And I am totally saying, the reason I'm having you give that experience is because so many people can create the idea that I'm too old, I don't have a way to get to the job.
Yeah.
You know, I can't afford to live on my own. And we're talking about Oxford, which is sober living, which is really, it's a fantastic program where people getting sober can go and live for, you know, anywhere, I don't know, $400 to $600 a month, a room to rent. And they provide boundaries for the newly recovered addict and alcoholic. It forces people to learn how to be in relationship with roommates, how to contribute to the household, how to be accountable to meetings. I mean, it's a fantastic program. And it's usually never preferred by anybody because nobody wants to go do that, right? Especially a woman in her 40s. It's like,
I avoided it.
Yeah. And you were you had an extensive professional past at the time prior to all of this. I mean, you traveled for work, you taught, you did all kinds of amazing things. And then you find yourself in this scenario. So when you're saying you're humbled.
Oh, yeah.
That all this past experience really didn't matter. And so you're waking up from the storm and you're in Oxford. You do have your sobriety, which is why, you know, it's a blessing. But you're in Oxford and you're finding that I have to walk to go to fast food in my mid 40s. Not that there's anything wrong with working for McDonald's. But the point is, for you, it was humiliating at that point to have to feel like you were starting over again.
Oh yeah. I was starting
with $30,000 worth of debt,
way over,
and no driver's license.
I felt like I was in, you know, fresh out of high school again, really. Right. Only with $30,000 worth of debt. And, you know, it didn't matter if it was $100,000 or $30,000. I still really didn't have any way to pay for it. So that was kind of the big conundrum.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the ugly truth. Now what? I mean, how am I going to get myself out from under this, you know? And it was only me. I wasn't going to go to family to say, hey, help me. Because quite frankly, my family had helped many times throughout the course of, you know, my adult life. And it was time for me to put my big girl pants on and suck it up and figure it out.
Yeah. And you did a very good job at figuring that out. One of the things that you had said is we had sat down and we had looked to find out where the priority was. So I will stress to whoever's watching this right now, if you're finding yourself in this similar situation, whether it's sobriety or just life, you know, you're trying to recover from a divorce, maybe it was a horrible marriage and things got out of control. I mean, whatever. When you get into prioritizing the debts on your bureau, what I would encourage you to do is always be aware of what the laws are around collecting debt. I mean, when we make a decision to take our financial control back, and I will use the word control. We're kind of weird about that word in sobriety, but I mean, to be cautious of the word control. but I will say
sometimes
when we're taking our power back in regards to our finances, it takes a lot of action and it takes a lot of determination to do that. And so why do I express that? Because you have to become educated. And the beautiful thing about the internet and how easy information is today is that it's at your fingertips. If you really want to know what the laws are in your state regarding collections, you can Google that. We live in the Northwest. And so in the Northwest, there are a lot of programs for people who have found themselves in these type of situations, especially if it's medical debt or low income. And I'm sure there's probably programs for people in recovery, all these different options out there. But what you're saying is for you, you decided, I'm going to take this and I'm going to be responsible for my part in this. And I'm just going to fix it and I'm going to figure it out.
Correct.
So we go through and we prioritize. Yeah. And I'm sure I was educating you on what the statutes are in regards to debt and what restarts a debt for the time frame in which it's owed.
Yeah.
You know, some bills, I'm going to talk very general here. Some bills, if it's been owing for, let's say, you know, 4 years and your statute in your state may be 5 years, if you make a payment on that debt, it will restart that clock.
Don't do that.
To start owing it for another five. And so depending on where that's at on the priority scale, that may not be the most strategic plan in the beginning. I'm just saying, I mean, we're going to talk real here. I'm not going to BS anybody. I mean, this is really what we're talking about because you have to start somewhere and you got to educate yourself on what you're looking at on the bureau. So, okay. So we prioritize everything. And then what'd you do? What'd you do after that?
You know, I made a budget. I really had to literally get out and, you know, create an Excel document and create a budget and see, okay, based on what my income is, what amount of that, how, what is the bare minimum I can get by living on? Yeah. Right. And so therefore, how much extra do I have to come to the table to the, you know, two or three creditors that I was going to actually make contact with and arrange payment terms or ask to make payment terms with. So I think that was the most important thing was create a budget.
Create a budget. Yeah. And, you know, you're using
a realistic budget.
A realistic, very good. Very good. So realistic budget, but within that realistic budget, there is still a willingness to put down which creditors you're going after first to make that phone call.
Yep.
And to do what you got to do. So, and if the word Excel spreadsheet scares you, pen and paper's fine too.
Yes.
I'm telling you. Income. Yes. X amount, keep it simple. I mean, that was one of the things, even in all the years when I did debt collection work on the phone with customers, well over 15, 20 years of that. The one thing I would always do when somebody was asking for payments is I would take them in a summary of income versus expenses because they just don't look at it because they don't want to look at it. Right.
Oh, for sure.
And so usually what'll happen is we look at it when we want something.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Can I afford this new car?
Yes.
No, but I'll.
I'm at the dealership and they won't give me a car. They say I've got 20 things on my credit. Now I'm calling, but they never have really looked at it. And so you do, you have to look at the income versus expenses and keep it realistic. I am interested. How did it feel when you had to start calling the collectors?
You know, you mentioned like hopeless and whatnot. I was afraid, right? I was afraid they were going to say no. I was afraid they were going to yell at me.
No, I'm glad you're talking about this because
I was afraid they were going to somehow like take all my money, not just what I could afford, and guilt.
Yeah.
I, you know, one of my go-to emotions, with my, you know, years of research into myself, self-awareness is, you know, guilt is one of my go-to emotions for whatever reason. It's another show. But I felt afraid and guilty. I would say are the two strongest emotions.
Well, how many of us go shopping and spend too much and then have an emotional hangover afterwards and feel guilty?
Yeah.
I mean, we can all relate to that, you know, well, unless finances isn't your thing, or you've never been here before, maybe you can't relate to it, which is good for you. Honestly, all seriously, but for some people, guilt is something they just carry along with their finances constantly feeling guilty, or constantly, should I buy this? Should I not buy this? In and out, right? Like just this constant mind game that's always occupying some space that they're never truly free of their finances. Their finances control them versus them having power over their finances.
Right.
Right. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that when we return. I'm going to ask her questions about those phone calls that she made to the bill collectors, how it went for her, what her experience was with that. I'm going to give my insight about that, being an ex-bill collector for many, many years and taking those calls on the other end. That might be interesting for you to hear. And then we're going to just talk a little bit about the psychology and more steps that she did, really, the steps that she took. Because, you know, once you pull the credit and you take a look at it and then you do your budget, now you're calling bill collectors. And then what? What comes after that? So we're going to take a break. Thank you for watching Know You're Crazy, Emotional Recovery in the Raw. We will be back to talk more about credit score recovery. If you are looking to get a hold of me, you can do that at my website at susandanae.com, Facebook Susan Danae, Instagram Susan Danae, DM me, whatever. All right, we'll be back shortly. Thanks. Everyone, welcome back to Know You're Crazy, Emotional Recovery in the Raw. Today, you are joining me, Susan Danae, with Sandra H. We are talking about credit recovery in the raw today. Sandra has a fantastic story of taking her credit score and raising it by the hundreds, which we actually got to get into that about the numbers that you went from here to there, because that was the fantastic text message I got a week ago, which was just beautiful. So we left off the first half of the segment. I always kind of like to review a little bit of what we talked about. We talked about, you know, one, the story, what got you there. Then we talked about the very first steps to take, which is pulling your credit report. We covered that there's three main credit reporting agencies, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. Sandra made sure that she said, you know, you got to check all three because you might miss something, because not everybody reports to the same bureaus, and something to always take into consideration. And some are easier for a higher score than others when it comes to those three bureaus. And then we talked about setting a budget, the importance of setting a budget and keeping it simple, and really taking a look at, you know, what bills are going to come first. We also talked about strategy when looking at the credit bureau. Some bills might be ready to be written off, which means by state law, they're no longer legally owing. And whether or not you want to restart that clock or not, you might want to prioritize those differently, make a different strategy when confronting those, because that will help clean up the credit faster. And then we talked right before we went to break. I just said, I really, you know, we pull the credit report, you set the budget, you prioritize which ones to pay, and you start paying. But then, you know, you got to call the bill collectors. That's where I wanted to go. You got to call the bill collectors. So can you share with us some of your experience with calling the bill collectors? Because I know that is a very scary place for people. And I've been the bill collector.
That's good to say. Of course you do.
Yeah. And I've been the bill collector. And I can also, I'll try not to talk, take up too much space with that. But I think people are probably pretty curious around some of those calls. But also just the change in mentality in the whole collection agency industry that's been taking place since 2008. But we'll get more into that. But for you, what was your experience with the bill collectors? What did you find? You hit on it a little bit, the fear, the worry, you know, scare they were going to yell at you.
I mean, because I've had those experiences in the past. But because I had made a budget and because I knew, according to the credit report, what my debt owed was. And I did go after the newest debts because I knew that those were going to sit there for 7 years in the state of Washington, seven and a half years, or if it's medical, 6.5, whatever. Again, like you said, every state's different. So Google it. So I knew which ones I was going to go after, but I also knew I couldn't let them tell me how much I was going to pay because I had a budget and I wanted to, I had a plan. However, I didn't want to come in sounding like a bully, right? So I basically just, I was very honest. which was foreign at that time to me, mm-hmm. To come to the person that I owe money to and say, look, I want to make good on this debt, but here's the deal. Like, I'm in my 40s, but I am working at McDonald's. I am living in a sober house. I only have so much money. What can I do to make good on this debt? And I was honestly shocked. I don't really remember anybody being rude to me or condescending. Like, they were just, I think, maybe amazed and possibly grateful and that, you know, it was a refreshing change from maybe the typical call they get where people are defensive and denying and, you know, coming up with excuses why we can't pay. I did, right? I was that person. And so I, the people I called were very receptive to my offers. I do remember a couple that, you know, kind of tried to push back and at that point I just was like, okay, well then I guess we're done. Right.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not making payment arrangements with you, you know, no deal or deal. And then hung up. And if I remember correctly, most of them would usually come around and get, it was like buying a car, right? Like you give an offer and you walk off the lot and then the car lot calls you back a couple of days later. Okay, fine. We'll sell it to you for that much. Same kind of deal. Right.
There is. So, and I know Phil, I'll jump in on that just real quick because I can give you the bill collector perspective on that. So there is a strategy when you're a bill collector and you're working on the phones. There's, I think it's like, trying to remember the statistic. Let's say you get 10 bills turned over to you for collection. It's a super low percentage as far as which ones will actually pay the bill once they reach that level. I'm probably going to hammer the heck out of this percentage. Some expert in the field will correct me probably, but I want to say it's something little like 20% if that will actually pay. So you are right in the fact that as a bill collector, if my job is to move money and I get somebody who calls in who's willing, one, I'm representing my client. So whether that's a credit card company, it could be anybody who hires a collection agency, a hospital, heating, air conditioning place. It doesn't really matter. I represent the client. Some clients, when they turn accounts over to collections, will have criteria that they want adhered to. Other clients, likely medical debt sometimes is a little bit more flexible unless it's a really high balance and there's a lot more that can go into that. But usually medical debt can be pretty lenient, especially in the state of Washington. I will say that very consumer advocate here in Washington state. But anyway, so there's strategy on the bill collector side. So you are correct. If I've got somebody who was calling in to make a payment, but I didn't feel I could meet it or I didn't feel that was a good deal. And later on, it's the end of the month and I'm trying to hit a quota. I may call you up and find out if you want to make a good faith payment. That's very true. That's very true. And on the flip side of that, I would also suggest exactly what you did to somebody. If they said, well, I called and they wouldn't, you know, I have a budget. And if I was coaching you or, you know, consulting you on turning the credit around, I would say, then don't make a deal that day. You know, stick to your plan. The other thing that came to mind for me when you were sharing was you never brought a victim into the conversation.
No.
That's huge. Not only, I'm going to kind of go on a little woo-woo here. Not only as a collector taking that inbound call is that important, but when it comes to energetically what you're attracting into your experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. You set your intention, you set yourself a goal, you call in with good energy, you're taking full responsibility, and 9 times out of 10, you get somebody who's willing to work with you. There are no accidents in that.
Right.
That is you completely setting yourself up for success in that area. And I just want to point that out because sometimes we can get real excited about a problem that we're going to solve, but we're still carrying this thing that somebody owes us something, or we're carrying fear into it. And then we're wondering why the outcome continues to be shit. Well, you know, there's a lot to be said for that.
Right.
That was a tangent. So now we're going to come back. Just had to acknowledge it. It was so obvious to me when you were sharing, like, yeah, you know, I mean, here you are, you know, barely affording, you know, this place you live in, you're at a job that you don't make as much money as you used to, you're you know, you've got $30,000 worth of debt, which is going to be multiple creditors, probably judgments and medical debt and everything. And you're calling in with this tiny budget, what felt tiny probably at the time compared to $30,000. And yet you rarely run into anybody who wouldn't work with you.
Right.
And the honesty piece of that is huge too. And really putting it out there, you know, one thing as a bill collector for me, when I saw somebody had actually done the homework before they called me and they didn't call me, and take this into account, if you're dealing with collection agencies, you know, I'm human too on the other end of that phone. So if you call me yelling at me, or you call me accusing me of doing something to you and I don't know you, but you're calling me because you want something and I can't act fast enough for you, and now you're calling me names because of that.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, that's a real hard one to work with. Mm-hmm. And there's all kinds of gray area in between there. But the fact that you brought such good energy into the conversation, responsibility, went a long way in dealing with debt collectors, because we're human too.
Sure.
You know, we're human too. Okay. So there's that. So those are the collection calls that you had to deal with. And so now you've got a couple payment plans going, you're starting to pay back the debt. What was it like for you? Because, you know, we all like quick fixes. Uh-huh. You know where I'm going with this, right?
I do.
So if we don't talk about the necessity of patience, something that's almost like a four-letter word in recovery, don't pray for patience, because you're going to get it and you're going to get lessons that are going to force you into patience. And it's brutal. It's a joke we make, right? Yeah. And there's truth to it, that being able to pay off a significant amount of debt in small chunks is going to take time. So you started this journey in what year?
I actually started it in 2013.
Mm-hmm. And do you mind telling me what your credit score was, or telling everybody what your credit score was?
I don't remember exactly. I want to say it was like 460, 480.
480. Yeah. So yeah. For those of you who maybe aren't familiar with credit scores.
It was so bad.
That's low. Okay. So you go, that's really low.
Yeah.
500, yeah, anything in that range is low. In fact, the highest you're going to get is in like maybe, I don't even know what the highest you can get, maybe 820s maybe might be the highest. I don't know.
I think it's 850.
850, mm-hmm. Thank you, because you've researched probably and you know you've got goals. So 850 is the highest.
I think so. And I'm not 100%, but I
know.
And
anywhere low, like in the high sevens and above is pretty excellent. So, you know, you guys have probably ran credit, or you'll apply for something and they'll say, you know, is your credit good, or is it fair? Well, high sevens and up are excellent. And then you kind of, whenever you get into that 600 range, you know, you might be starting, you know, looking at some questions that is going to need some cleaning up. So a good goal, if you're just, you know, obviously 800 would be a great goal. But starting out, it's good to know that, because seeing the increments as it goes up. Okay. So you started out in the high fours, yep. Let's say. Okay. Which we both agree is not good.
No.
All right. Bad. And what did you do to track your credit score? How did you know, like, because we're talking about patience and what it takes. And so sometimes with patience come small wins.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie, I quickly became obsessed with my credit score. And bound and determined to get it to rise, I downloaded a credit app, right?
Yeah.
I used Credit Karma. It's free, yep. Super easy, and it's improved a lot over, you know, almost, you know, 7-8 years. So yeah. That's what I did. And
does Credit Karma do? Like, how often do they notify you? What does it, like, what's it telling
you?
Well,
it's just an app, right? And I don't choose to get notifications for it generally, but yeah. It will send, you can configure it to set up alerts. Like if there's something new that has hit your account, one of your credit bureaus, that one only does Equifax and TransUnion. It does not do Experian, or does it do Experian but not Equifax? No, I don't remember actually.
Okay.
But it does two out of the three. And it'll tell you, I think it checks your credit like every week.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing I have learned is it ebbs and it flows, right? Like you buy a new car, it's going to go down because that's like, you know, $30,000-$40,000 worth of new debt.
Yeah.
And you haven't really paid any on it yet. So it's a numbers game. I mean, I'm not going to lie. The credit score thing, it's It's a game. I see it as a game now, and I will win this game.
You are winning the game.
I'm like, I will win. I know how to, I do. I have figured out like little tips and tricks to like, you know, whether it be make a double payment on a particular credit card, to boost it up a little bit more and things like that. And actually that app does a really good job of educating people. So if you don't have a whole lot of knowledge at all, it's a great place to start.
Really. Yeah.
And it's free.
That's great feedback. So when you'd see the small wins, would that help keep you on track?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it helped with the discipline.
Yep.
Just keep doing what you're doing and keep putting it away, and slowly but surely over time, it starts to come back.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to lie. I think it's really important to let everybody know I did not do this perfectly.
It was a seven and eight year journey
to get to my goal.
Yeah.
You know, and it was what, last week or 2 weeks ago, that I finally got to the one place that I had set out to be. And I was like, yes.
And what, and do you mind sharing what the score was?
Over 800.
Over 800.
Mm-hmm.
That made me feel so joyful. That gave me goosebumps. I was like, look at that. She did it. She did it.
Yeah.
That is over 800.
Yeah.
Which is a fantastic score.
Yeah, it was, it's been a lot of work. It's taken diligence, persistence, and discipline. You know, those small wins, like you said, they absolutely did just, you know, give me that little bit of self-confidence. That, okay, you know, a little bit. And I knew it was going to be a long, I was in it for the long haul, right?
Yeah.
Like, there were, and I had to do little things once the debtors were paid off to continue to grow my credit, because then I was left in a place where, okay, they were all paid off, but I had no credit.
Where did you start with that?
I bought a car from a tiny little car lot.
Yep.
I was finally able, Washington State finally said, you can drive again. And
score.
Another win. And so I went to
another show.
I went to a little tiny car lot, you know, found myself a little Toyota Corolla. I think it was decent, like $6,000, but the interest rate was 29.99% because that's all I could get with basically no credit. And I paid on that for a year. And then I refinanced through this. I can't remember the name of the credit. There's certain like high risk loan companies out there. I can't remember the name of it, but I refied through them and I got it down to 24.99, which I thought was, I was like, oh my God, I'm really.
Well, still though, 5%.
I'm really doing this
thing.
And fast forward another year, I went to a Hyundai lot and I bought a brand new car, a little Hyundai. And I think I got 12%. Interest.
And so the whole time,
it was just a matter of.
That's fantastic. So the whole time you've got Credit Karma also that you're checking and that you're getting this feedback from.
Yep.
And so the financial rebound for you, like your sobriety, was a complete lifestyle change.
Absolutely.
It was about taking this particular area of your life and really focusing on it and making the change. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're going to share more on that. We're going to go take another quick break. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about lifestyle change when it comes to financially resetting, in particular in regards to your credit. And I'm sure I'll come up with something more to add to that from my experience. So if you'd like to get a hold of me, go to the website, SusanDenae.com or SusanDenae on Facebook or Instagram. Shoot me a message. I'd be more than happy to answer questions if you have any on this topic or pretty much anything else. So we'll see you here in a bit. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Know Your Crazy Talk Show, where we are talking about emotional recovery in the raw. And with today's guest, Sandra, we are talking about credit score recovery in the raw. Sandra, like myself, is a woman with years of sobriety behind her, and she made a dedicated, focused effort on reestablishing her credit score over her time in sobriety. And so today we're talking about the tidbits and secrets of that, maybe the action steps taken. I'm giving my own debt collection experience being in that industry for over nearly 25 years, taking the phone calls, looking at credit reports, teaching, speaking, all that good stuff in that industry. And there's been a lot of changes in that industry, actually, and I might be able to get to that this show. We'll find out. But before we left, she was talking about how, you know, once you get the credit, you get everything paid off, you know, but now you have no credit. And so this is another dilemma people will face is now I have no credit. So how do I get credit? I mean, we're even talking to one of our oldest children right now about that, encouraging him to do exactly what you did, which was go get a car loan, because usually you can find some financing with car loans and you had to go super high interest rate right out of the gate. Mm-hmm. But you also knew that you'd be refinancing this debt, but you had to get your foot in the door.
Yeah.
So pride has to take a back seat and action has to prevail. Mm-hmm. And you had made a lifestyle change, which means that you took your finances and you put them as a top priority for you. Yeah. And you said, I'm going to look at this. I'm going to focus on this on a weekly, if not daily basis, to know exactly what I'm doing and how I'm doing it. So with that awareness, so much knowledge about yourself comes out, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. In addition to financing the car and then refinancing the car and refinancing like 29 down to 12 and making that headway, what else did you do to get your credit reestablished?
I also got a secured credit card. Okay. Just to reestablish some sort of like revolving credit. So I think I went to...
Before you get started, what's a secure credit card compared to an unsecured credit card?
A secured credit card is usually through a banking institution where you give them, I think I gave them $300 and they gave me $500 worth of credit. Or, you know, depending on your score, they may only give you $300 worth of credit if you give them $300. So it's just a way to, it's
get like a credit card on
it's like a
credit,
savings
right?
account, but you're drawing on it, right?
Yeah.
And paying on it monthly.
But it's
and
being reported on your credit.
It is like being reported. Card. Yep. And they will eventually at the after using it and paying it on time every single time. And, you know, trying to also pay more than the minimum due, because that was important. I knew that was taken into consideration for your credit worthiness was the amount you're paying. So I always tried to pay more. And then I started going after department store credit cards because they, I think, are the next easiest to get. Like, I think my very first card was a Macy's credit card or something.
Do you know what mine was? Remember. I just have to throw this out there.
JCPenney?
Montgomery Ward.
Oh, okay.
Do you remember Montgomery Ward?
I do.
My first TV and end table. I think it was 19.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, Montgomery Ward.
I don't even remember my actual first credit card because that would have been like a really long time ago, but I don't remember. But
anyway,
so I think it was a gas card, actually.
Was it a gas card?
Yeah, like a Shell gas card or something.
So you went in, sorry. So you went into department stores because that was the next easiest to get at that point. You got a Macy's card.
Yes, but that can also be very dangerous.
Yes.
Just saying. So I think that was, and it still has at times been like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have done that. Right. So, you know, whatever it was, it's a lesson.
So now I'm glad we're talking about this because, you know, it can sound, you know, as we're discussing this, like suddenly, you know, we wake up and we're disciplined and we never have debt again.
Yeah.
Right. Or, but really it's more of a decision of we learn how to manage our spending and how to manage the bill paying once you come back. I mean, I know in my history, I've had it debt up, paid off, debt up, paid off, like just the cycle, right? But it never went to the past due phase anymore. But there was definitely, you know, within your time of reestablishing your credit, I'm sure you've still had roller coaster moments.
When I bought my place, I bought a condo and I wanted
and the condo needs furniture.
I wanted everything right now. It needed to be perfect. And I had quite a few credit cards.
Yeah.
And I had quite a bit of credit established by then, right? This was fast forward, you know, I was 5 years sober and that summer I bought a house, right?
Yeah.
So I needed stuff Yeah. So I thought, but that what's funny about that though is, you know, I panicked a little bit and then I was like, oh wait, I could pay all this interest off here, there, are other things. Mm-hmm. What is a different? Oh, I could probably consolidate all that debt, right? Mm-hmm. And just get like a separate loan to pay all those credit cards off, which is exactly what I did. So, but that's based on my knowledge of credit and the things that are available to me. And then because of the fact that I had established credit and that my credit score was going up at a rate that obviously a bank would say, okay, she's obviously going to pay this, you know?
Yeah.
And it wasn't a huge loan. I think I took out a $16,000 loan to pay off everything, like literally everything I owed was paid off.
Yeah.
And so now I have that at a much, that's like a, I don't even know, 5% interest as opposed to 28.3% interest, right? Yeah. Like it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out like that's a better idea.
Yeah.
But, you know, had I couldn't have even done that in early recovery.
Yeah.
That was never even an option.
So did you find that with that one time when you got the credit cards back up there, were you, were you ever scared that it would go back?
Yeah. No, I was just in panic mode. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Right. Like, this is not okay. Shame on you. You know better. Right.
Yeah.
And so, and so I,
you just tackled
I fixed
it again.
Yeah.
You tackled it again. You tackled it again. And so that kind of gets me into the next area. Oh, you know, we're getting so close to the rest. I'm afraid if I open up another area, we're not going to finish in time. So I'm not going to. I'm going to pause on that. I will tell you there's going to be so much more to talk about, though, when it comes to doing this. But as a real quick rehab, okay, or rehash, not rehab. So
rehash. Not again.
Or rehab.
No.
Okay. Make the decision to look at your credit. Make the decision. Learn how to strategize which debts to be paid off first. Become educated in your state laws and know what you're looking at and why you're looking at it. Keep in mind, there's 3 credit reports out there. There are plenty of places online that you can pull the credit report for free. But there's 3 credit reports, TransUnion, Experian, and Equifax, and all of them don't report the same, and not all creditors will report to all 3. So you don't want to miss one if this is what you're going after. Next was do a budget. Make a budget. Be simple about it. You're going to have to look at it at some point. Make your budget and then strategize which bills are going to come first and carry the appropriate energy into the phone call with the bill collectors. Do the best you can with that. Remember that the bill collectors are people on the other end of the phone also. Personal opinion, you're not always going to have all nice bill collectors, just the way that rolls. The majority of them are, though, and the majority of them really want to help you. And I will say in that industry, complete redo on mentality and outlook on having conversations with consumers. In fact, my last marketing gig was wrapped up doing telephone scripting, compassionate phone skill set, teaching agents how to be compassionate over the telephone and still get the job done. So that's a transformation all in and of itself. So you may not have to be that scared is the point I'm making.
Yeah.
But then you got to have your short wins. You got to have your easy wins that remind you, keep you on the same path and keep going. And then you got to reestablish that credit. And Sondra gave a couple great tips on that as far as car places are good, retail stores can be good, secured credit cards with banks can be good. So much we could talk about, but I'm going to wrap up because I've got a couple minutes left. And so before we end the show, Sondra, I just want to ask you a question that I'm trying to get in the habit of asking all my guests. And that is, and you're going to have a couple minutes to answer this, but in your life, I know it's kind of, what is the one thing in your life? What is the one thing that you are the most proud of for you? And it doesn't have to be with what we talked about today. It could be anything. When you really reflect back, what are you the most proud of that you've done? Overcame.
I'm just going to go with my gut. The first thing that comes to mind is relationships.
Yeah.
Healthy relationships, you know, cause it's like all encompassing. My first is like, I think of my children, right?
Yeah.
Because I wasn't the greatest parent, but I'm a kick-ass grandma. And I have reestablished those relationships with my children, right?
Yeah.
So they're healthy.
Yeah.
intimate relationships.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Learning how to have an intimate relationship.
Yeah. You know, to pick correctly.
There's a lot to be said for that.
Wow. Again, another show. anyway, and work.
Yeah.
Right. Work. Yeah. It's really hard to have my type of personality and sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, get work done, which is my job,
mm-hmm.
but then do like know where the boundary is, where to be compassionate, where yep. to be considerate, where to be firm with love. And
yeah.
Anyway, so I think just the biggest thing, you know, and I too sponsor women mm-hmm. in recovery. And so though, like all those relationships,
yep.
you know, family, intimate, work, recovery, priceless.
You know, at the end of the day, you know.
Oh yeah.
Especially when you lose somebody, you look around, it's who's standing next to you
mm-hmm.
at the very end of the day, right? And it's those yeah. relationships, being able to have the valued relationships in your life. Yeah. And thank you for being one of mine.
No,
love you.
Love you,
sister. Too. Thank you. All right. Well, thank you for joining us today. It's been a pleasure. If you got any questions, you can reach out to me on the website, susandenay.com. Have a blessed day, guys. Bye.
You have been listening to Know You're Crazy.
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 And my name is Susan Denay. We are identifying, understanding, and treating your crazy one episode at a time. Tune in to transformationtalkradio.com. To connect with me or Growth Spurts Your Life, please visit susandenay.com. That's Susan Denay, DENEE.com.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.